Stay tuned for one of the most fascinating programs you'll ever hear as we explore the strange and mysterious world of the paranormal and UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dealing with extraordinary claims of the paranormal on Earth and beyond. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, the controversies are real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of parapsychology, futuristic science, and the UFO enigma. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss some of the most fascinating and strange subjects around. Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Paranet Continuum program. Tonight's show is a little bit different in that we don't have a single guest. Instead, we're bringing you the best of Paranet, where we replay portions of interviews we've had with some of our remarkable guests over the past few months. Now, please do not call in since we won't be taking live phone calls. However, we will continue to give away some of those nice alien gray t-shirts later on in the hour, so feel free to call in for that when I ask you to. Now, first up on the show tonight, the so-called Roswell alien autopsy film. Later this month, that film is supposed to get a national airing on Fox TV. The big question is the film genuine? Does it really show an autopsy of alien bodies from the crash of a saucer near Roswell, New Mexico in 1947, or is it just a big elaborate hoax? A few weeks back, we spoke with Stanton Friedman, the original researcher on the Roswell case, and he told us what he knew about the film's authenticity.
Yeah, you know, it's a crazy story. I'm a scientist accustomed to dealing with facts and data, and boy, this has been one of the slipperiest stories around. Last January 13th, Friday the 13th, an ill omen indeed, Reg Presley, a well-known English musician, rock star, used to be a member of the Troggs, out of the blue, sort of, announced on a talk show over there that he was aware of 15 reels of 10 minutes each of film taken out on the debris field and of the autopsies of aliens all connected with Roswell. This is a shocking story on a BBC morning talk show. I got a call the next day from somebody I'd met years ago in England, and I happened to have been working with an agent who has booked me for a lecture in England, and he was in the music business as well, so I got back to him, and on Monday I was talking to Reg Presley by phone. And on the next day I was talking to Ray Santilli, the owner of this supposed footage. And in talking to Santilli, a lot of questions were in my head. The claim was that he had been in the States looking for some special, previously unshown footage of Elvis Presley. Found this old cameraman, 82 years old, who supposedly had shot quite a bit of footage of Presley way back when. And they admired the footage. Santilli was with somebody else. And he said, supposedly, well, gee, if you think that's great, you ought to see this other stuff. And he's got these 15 reels of film. Now, the numbers keep changing, but let's stick with 15 at least for the moment. And supposedly he was paid $100,000 in cash. And the only reason he sold it at this time is his granddaughter was getting married and he wanted to give her a gift. Now, Santilli is bragging to me he's been researching this for well over a year. They've got all kinds of paperwork. The cameraman is who he says he was. And I said, well, gee, you know, it sounds very exciting. I'd sure like to look at it. I'm the original investigator on Roswell. Now, one interesting thing, he said he'd never heard of me, and when I was doing a television show a couple months later in England, the guy says, gee, Stan, I only spent 3 hours, and I was running across you all over the place. But, you know, if he was really researching. Anyway, one of the things I said, well, I'd like to see the footage. I've got the base yearbook. There should be a lot of stuff in it that we can verify. famous persons, military guys with name tags, ranks, you know, all kinds of detail. It's a research source. And, we've worked real hard on it, and we've been able to establish that the cameraman is who he says he was and is and was in the place he says he was. And I said, well, there ought to be people that are recognizable in it. He said, oh, yes, how's Harry Truman? And I said, well, yeah, that's a good start. And he said, we were able to show that Truman was indeed in Dallas. And I'd never heard of Dallas as a site for autopsies or wreckage or anything. The wreckage had gone through Fort Worth, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he said, we've checked and we've proven that he was indeed in Dallas when he says he was, when the cameraman says he was. And I said, oh, you checked with the Truman Library? And he says, yes. And there were a lot of other details with nothing to back it up. He said that they had dated the film back to the right time frame from the emulsion. And so I arranged for my agent. This is like Tuesday. I'm talking to Santilli, mid-January. My agent makes an appointment with him for Friday. And Santilli canceled. The next Wednesday, and Santilli canceled. And sort of flimsy last-minute stuff. Anyway, finally, there's a lot of looking around, and I'm talking to a lot of people and a lot of other researchers in the States, Kent Jeffrey and Paul Davids, who did the Showtime movie. All were volunteering to look at the stuff, and Kent is a pilot with Delta International, so he could get over there, you know, in an instant kind of thing. And Santilli wasn't having anything of anybody. And then it really hit the fan in March, when Philip Mantle, who's head of the British UFO Research Association, director of research, I guess, there was an article in the newspaper saying that he was announcing that Santilli had agreed to show the footage at their conference in August of this year. And the article certainly slanted it along the lines that made it sound like Mantle was buying it hook, line, and sinker. And so there was a big furor in England, not much here in the regular media, but there was over there. And Central Television brought me over to do a program with some noisy negativists. And Mantle was there and several other English ufologists whom I'd met before. And we all talked before and were cooperating afterward. Did you hear that word, cooperation?
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare one in ufology these days, it seems. And I took on the nasty, noisy negativist, an astronomer who obviously knew nothing about the subject, and did five other interviews. And it was clear Mantle at least had been misquoted. He hadn't made the claims. Anyway, things are still shuffling around out there. And meanwhile, I had checked with the Truman Library, which I've spent weeks at. I've been to 15 archives. This is just one of many. But I know people there, and they checked for me. And Truman, as far as they're concerned, wasn't in Dallas, wasn't in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
In now it's June, July, August, September, October.
So your take on this, Stan, is that it's probably a hoax?
Well, yeah, especially after talking to people who were at the official showing, which also got postponed, but did take place finally on May the 4th, a week ago Friday. It seems to me, from the people who described it, that it was a crummy science fiction film.
That's Canadian researcher Stanton Friedman. As you may remember, a federal GAO investigation of the Roswell cases ended with the disclosure that many documents relating to Roswell were destroyed for reasons and by persons unknown. Now, coming up next, we'll hear about some modern-day strange sightings in the New Mexico desert. I'm Michael Corbin. Stay tuned for more of the Best of Paranet.
It's been said that the pen is mightier than the sword. With Paranet, the computer and modem is mightier than the pen. Paranet is the world's foremost electronic authority on UFOs and the paranormal. Paranet gives you rapid access to UFO researchers and others like you who want to know what's going on. You'll find stimulating discussions with an interactive link to the world through the Internet's information superhighway. There's a variety of departments dealing with paranormal activities, parapsychology, alien abduction research, conspiracy theories and government cover-ups, and cutting-edge science. There's even a skeptics conference. Paranet also has the world's most comprehensive database of news articles, sighting reports, and much more available for a small fee. So plug into power and knowledge with Paranet. Call the data line at 303-863-0469. That's 303-863-0469. Or for more information, contact Paranet at 303-863-0484.
We'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the Paranet Continuum. It's Alien Grays of East Windsor, Connecticut. Alien Grays makes t-shirts and sweatshirts for the UFO enthusiast. And let me tell you, it's some of the best artwork you've ever seen on a t-shirt. Alien Grays has over 15 designs, including the thin-faced alien gray with almond-shaped eyes that abductees have talked about so much, X-Files shirts, Star Trek shirts, fire in the sky, and other dazzling alien life forms and space art. Now, all t-shirts are blazing full-color laser-printed onto 100% pre-shrunk white cotton tees. These shirts will attract a lot of attention when you wear them. To order, call this number during the week. It's 1-800-561-7715. That's 1-800-561-7715. Now, Alien Grays is helping to support this show by giving you a free t-shirt. If you call in now, I'll take the ninth caller now at 1-800-UFO-2009. That's the ninth caller at 1-800-836-2009 for a free t-shirt from Alien Grays.
UFOs for real, or are they just fiction, or imagination, or disinformation? To find out, stay tuned for more of the Paranet Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
Welcome back. Tonight we're playing the best of Paranet, excerpts from some of the fascinating conversations we've had over the past few weeks. In July, we talked with archaeology researcher Kay Winter, who told us about some rather strange goings-on at an Indian reservation near Gallup, New Mexico. Lots of UFO activity and even the crash of a U.S. military stealth bomber.
Number one, the stealth crashed on sacred Zuni land, a mesa called Paye Mesa. It sits above Nutria Lake, which is about halfway between Raymond, New Mexico, and the Zuni reservation. And as I said, interestingly, the Zunis were reporting UFO activity in the area every night for a week before the crash. However, there is some question if there is a connection or not, because as the locals have told me, it's not unusual for military aircraft to be flying and flying very low in that area. As one Zuni woman said, they do it all the time. We complain to the Air Force, but they don't do anything. They don't care. A fellow named John Claves of the FAA Southwest Region reported that the night of the crash, there may have been as many as 12 stealths flying in the area. But ironically, it may in fact have been nature, not a UFO, that brought the stealths down. The locals are saying that at Nutria Lake this year, the duck population is very high. The stealths were flying at 500 feet or lower. And the eyewitnesses reported that there was no explosion in the air. It exploded on contact with the ground.
Okay.
Therefore, it is highly likely that a duck was taken into the intake of the plane, and if they were only at 500 feet, there was no room to recover.
Okay, now this crash was actually subsequent to about a week's worth of sighting activity. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Correct. And there was no sightings reported the night of the crash, but the FAA would acknowledge that there were at least 12 stealths in the area. The one that crashed was out of the Air Force Base at Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Okay. How far is that from El Malpié?
Probably 300 miles.
Okay. Now, Kay, tell us about the UFO sightings, the ones that that were chasing or pacing these cars.
All right. I have three reports. I guess I should back up for just a second, say that when you come through the El Malpié area, you drive up a hill, a long hill out of the valley called Cinder Hill. And this is just before you reach the Bandera Crater, which, by the way, is bisected by the Continental Divide.
Now, the Bandera Crater is an old volcano, right?
It is an old volcano. The El Malpié area is a volcanic area approximately 17 miles long with several inactive craters.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I have three reports of cars with one to four persons that began driving up Cinder Hill when they first saw the lights. In two cases, they first looked like bright stars, but, and I quote, "They were too bright, and they stayed with us. Then they came closer, and they lit up the inside of the car. We kept driving past the crater and through the forest, and the object stayed with us. It was at the side of the car, just above the trees. It sort of hopped along the treetops. It followed us for a ways, and then it just disappeared." The second report I have is nearly identical, and it involved a retired lady from Zuni when she experienced nearly the same thing in the same place. She was, quote, "so scared, my car was bright as daylight, and I didn't look right or left. I just kept driving till it went away." The third of these involved four women, one of which was the mayor of Grants. They were driving from Grants to Rayma, and again at night. They said the object appeared to one side of their car, and like the other two reports, hopped along over the treetops as it paralleled their car. They were so frightened, they stopped at a business on the way to Rayma. They rushed inside, and they asked the owner to, quote, "call the police, call the highway patrol, call the TV station, call somebody." As they calmed down and they talked to the business owners, they were describing the object. All the while they were talking, one of the owners is drawing a picture. When they were done talking, he held up his drawing and said, "did it look something like this?" "And that is exactly what it looked like," they exclaimed. In all the cases...
Okay, wait. Kate, let me interrupt you. What did it look like?
Here. In all the cases, the witnesses described a saucer-shaped object, silvery with red, green, and white pulsating lights. The object was said to be, quote, "not too large, maybe a 20 to 30-foot diameter."
Very interesting. Now, I also understand from talking to you before this, what are the locals saying about this? They do not believe necessarily that they're seeing alien spacecraft?
No, they don't. Every single person I have talked to, number one, believes that the Roswell crash was real, that there was a spacecraft, and that what they are seeing is that technology being copied by our military and doing practice flights in their part of the world.
Okay, now that's very interesting because that's going to be the subject of our second half of the program tonight, allegedly talking about the deal. The government is building and flying replicas of actual alien spacecraft that have been captured. Are the people down there, are they scared about this?
No. Of course, a couple of them were when they saw this, but it seems to be the reports that I have gotten go back to 1953. And for the people that live in this area, seeing UFOs or seeing lights in the sky has simply become a way of life. Very few people that I run into haven't seen something at some time.
So it's something that's been going on for quite some time down there.
Well, it has. There was an interesting sighting at a mine, which is just 4 or 5 miles west of Bandera Crater. For three consecutive nights, all of the lights at the mine went off. At the same time, a UFO floated across the top of the mine. As it passed, the lights came back on, and the UFO was seen floating towards Bandera Crater. In another instance, a fellow who lives in the area on more than one occasion has seen the, quote, "silver saucer" hovering above Bandera Crater and shining a beam into the crater.
Boy, that's incredible. Have the police investigated any of this? Have you had any contact with the local law enforcement or anything down there?
I asked several of the people I've talked to if they reported this, and they looked at me and laughed and said, why would we? We see this all the time, and outside of this group of people, probably no one would believe us.
Wow. Have you seen, now you said you've seen something, or what have you observed down there yourself?
I'm sorry, Michael, I couldn't hear you.
I say, what have you observed down there yourself?
What have I observed myself?
Yes, uh-huh.
I have not seen any lights in the sky. I did have an interesting chat with a local employee just this past week. North of Rhema is a lake, and along the lake is a canyon. People live along the top of the canyon, and they said, we're getting very tired of that aircraft flying through our canyon at night. And when I asked them to describe it, they said, it's large. It looks like an old World War II plane. It's dark green. It has no markings. It's so dark it's nearly black. And I said, well, if it's a World War II plane, does it have propellers? They said, no, it doesn't seem to, but it flies down through the canyon and buzzes over the top of our houses 3 to 4 times a week. We're tired of the plane. We have called the Air Force and complained, but they don't call us back.
Okay, now I know you to be a skeptical person, and this report that you're filing is quite interesting. What is your personal feeling about this? What opinions have you drawn or conclusions have you drawn from what you have observed and been involved with down there? What is your opinion of it?
All right, Michael, I would say, number one, this is an area of small towns and reservations. These are hardworking, friendly people. I don't think they're given to wild stories. The people that I've talked to are highly credible people, business owners, ranchers. They're not hysterical people. I think that they're very credible. I think that because of the type of lives they lead, and I'm getting the same story from so many different people that I think that adds to the credibility.
Fascinating stuff, I think you'll agree. That was Kay Winter with some reports of unusual incidents from the New Mexico desert. Stay with us for more of the best of Paranet. Coming up next, we go to that mysterious place called Area 51 in Nevada with another report that our government is experimenting with alien spacecraft. We'll be right back.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services and MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet Newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet. A winning combination.
You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet Continuum, and it deals with some of the most fascinating mysteries around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
Is the U.S. government taking apart alien spacecraft at a secret military base? That report surfaced years ago from the base known as Area 51 in southern Nevada, and from an engineer and base employee named Bob Lazar. His story has never really checked out, and so it remains just another interesting story. Now, earlier this summer, we spoke with Glenn Campbell of the Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada. Glenn is a very level-headed skeptic like I am. He's been in contact with someone named J-Rod, a retired mechanical engineer who has another story about alien technology. Glenn now tells us more.
Well, this is an old guy. He's about 70 now. I ran into him at one of these little local UFO conventions. And he's, you know, just your average grandfatherly type. You wouldn't think much of him. He's involved in a few little crafts that are quite interesting. But you get talking to him, and he claims to have worked for some 30 years on a program that seems connected with the program that Bob Lazar mentions. He's designing simulators for human reproductions of alien craft. In other words, somewhere along the line, we've got some alien craft, and some secret government agency is trying to reproduce them. And as they're reproducing them, they're also designing a flight simulator to train the pilots. Now, my source never worked with the real craft, but he did work with the flight simulator, and that correctly implies some things about the real craft. So this is the sort of story you would expect if there really was a program of this nature, a big, highly compartmentalized government project where people really don't know what's going on in every other compartment, but someone in one particular specialty would know the general picture, and that's what this person conveys.
Okay. Now, why did he pick the pseudonym J-Rod? Is that something significant, or?
Well, it turns out he knows he's run into an alien, and he's in the course of his work, basically in a design laboratory, but in the course of his work, he has seen a live alien, one of your typical grays, dressed in street clothes. And this alien, whose name is J-Rod, he understands, acts as a technical advisor for our government, helping to translate the alien technology into our technology.
Glenn, now, where does this the history of this goes back to, what, 1953 or beyond?
It goes back to about the mid-50s. Okay, first of all, I need to talk about what I know about J-Rod, and what I know is basically what he presents himself as a retired gentleman. He definitely has a background working for government defense programs. That I've confirmed from other sources that he indeed did work, for example, with the NERVA program, developing a nuclear rocket and various other defense programs. So it's possible. Beyond that, I have only the word of this gentleman. I'm not saying at this point whether it's true or not, but it's fascinating folklore, and it's folklore that dovetails with the other folklore we know about, namely the crash disk stories of the 40s and 50s, and with Mr. Lazar. Now, according to J-Rod, there were crashes. He doesn't mention Roswell, but there was a crash in Arizona, northwestern Arizona, near Kingman. And this was about, I believe it was 1953 or earlier, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, we recovered the craft, we recovered bodies, and we recovered some live ones. And these live ones became the emissaries that eventually put the secret portion of our government in contact with the aliens.
Now, when you say secret portion of our government, what does that mean?
Well, we're not talking about the CIA or the Air Force or any of our known agencies. We're talking about a portion of the government that was essentially calved off from the main government back in the early and mid-1950s. And this was essentially done as the Manhattan Project was done. It was put in its own compartment. Thereby, you can't get any of this information by filing a FOIA with the NSA or the CIA. You have to go to the compartment that this is really in, and you just can't find it. The this what he calls a satellite government. And this was set up by all of all the people. It was set up by Richard Nixon, he says.
Interesting. That's quite interesting. Of course, a secret satellite government makes a lot of sense. And essentially, if they are working on this type of technology, it makes sense when they say, the Air Force says, we don't know anything. You know, we don't have any evidence of this. Glenn, why is this guy coming forward?
That is one of the more interesting aspects of his story. He says that he has been given permission to talk, and that his bosses know, for example, that he's talking to me and that he's talking to others. And this is perhaps the most intriguing part of the story. They're not suppressing him. They're letting him talk. They're giving him certain limits, things he cannot talk about. But he's talked about aliens. He's talked about discs. And this is very interesting if it's true. It means that the government is trying to open up, trying to leak this information out in small ways over time.
So, in other words, what he's telling you then would be one of their ways of leaking this to the public, correct?
Right. And it's not terribly sinister, as many UFO buffs would seem. It's just he has had an interest in talking. He asked his boss, can I talk? And his boss says, yes, here's what you can talk about and here's what you can't talk about. It's not really a deliberate program as much as it's just a loosening up a bit.
Okay. This J-Rod that you're working with, do you know, I mean, has he been using his real name with you? Do you know?
Sure, I know who he is, and I'm sure quite a few people out there know who he is as well. He's not terribly secret.
Uh-huh.
I simply want to protect him from the crush of the UFO
well, sure.
crowd. It's not the government we're trying to protect him from. It's from the UFO believers who really can be terribly insistent and demanding on one's time. I think Bob Lazar is a good example of this. As soon as he came forward, he was deluged with people camping out on his front lawn, essentially.
You're right.
And demanding to query him, and simply no human should have to go through that.
And so the mystery continues about alien spacecraft in the U.S. government. Next up, we take a look at what's going on with the alien abduction phenomena as we talk with a reporter who tries to make sense of it all. I'm Michael Corbin. Stay with us for more of the Best of Paranet. We'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the Paranet Continuum. It's Alien Grays of East Windsor, Connecticut. Alien Grays makes t-shirts and sweatshirts for the UFO enthusiast. And let me tell you, it's some of the best artwork you've ever seen on a t-shirt. Alien Grays has over 15 designs, including the thin-faced alien gray with almond-shaped eyes that abductees have talked about so much. X-File shirts, Star Trek shirts, Fire in the Sky, and other dazzling alien life forms in space art. All t-shirts are blazing full-color laser-printed onto 100% pre-shrunk white cotton tees. These shirts will attract a lot of attention when you wear them. To order, call this number during the week. It's 1-800-561-7715. That's 1-800-561-7715. Now, Alien Grays is helping to support this show by giving you a free t-shirt if you call in now. I'll take the fifth caller now at 1-800-UFO-2009. That's caller number five at 1-800-836-2009 for a free t-shirt from Alien Grays and Paranet.
It's been said that the pen is mightier than the sword. With Paranet, the computer and modem is mightier than the pen. Paranet is the world's foremost electronic authority on UFOs and the paranormal. Paranet gives you rapid access to UFO researchers and others like you who want to know what's going on. You'll find stimulating discussions with an interactive link to the world through the Internet's information superhighway. There's a variety of departments dealing with paranormal activities, parapsychology, alien abduction research, conspiracy theories and government cover-ups, and cutting-edge science. There's even a skeptics conference. Paranet also has the world's most comprehensive database of news articles, sighting reports, and much more available for a small fee. So plug into power and knowledge with Paranet. Call the data line at 303-863-0469. That's 303-863-0469. Or for more information, contact Paranet at 303-863-0484. comes to UFOs, it's important to keep an open mind, but not as open as, say, a refuse can. We separate the facts from the garbage on the Paranet Continuum. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Now, one might expect that a scientific conference devoted to people who claim to have been kidnapped by aliens would be dismissed out of hand. But journalist C.D.V. Bryan did not dismiss it, and he attended all 5 days of the conference held at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 1992. As the conference progressed, Bryan was astonished by the quality of the stories being told by men and women with very convincing accounts of being abducted and then examined by telepathic gray creatures. Now, if these people weren't abducted, then what happened to them? That question is at the center of Bryan's new book, Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, Alien Abduction and UFOs at the Conference at MIT. The first question I had for Bryan is, what's your take on this whole phenomena?
We've cut to the chase, haven't we? I don't know what's going on, Mike. At the beginning of the conference, when it first started, it was so straightforward, the Bud Hopkins, Dave Jacobs sense of the, you know, the breeding program of the extraterrestrials and UFOs coming from strange places, not necessarily other planets.
Kind of the foreboding thing, right?
You know, it was a very negative element. But by the time the conference was sort of halfway through, it was as though these great tectonic plates were shifting among the people at the conference, and it was far less the ongoing genetic study, the human species itself, the subject of a breeding experiment, which is, in Hopkins and Jacobs' word, what they thought was going on, which had always smacked to me, I thought, of the old science fiction dying planet scenario, you know, the beings coming with their unraveling DNA. And by the end, it was far more new age and overlapping universes, dimensions, and that they were not extraterrestrial, but that, in fact, that they were here. I'm sure you're aware of Bud Hopkins' Linda Cortile story, the woman who was abducted out of the 12-story apartment building in New York.
Right,
And I would assume your listeners are, too. But the odd part of that story to me was always that, despite the fact that this was witnessed by the UN delegate and his aides and the woman crossing the Brooklyn Bridge at the time, was that the craft then lifts off higher up, passes over the Brooklyn Bridge, and dives into the East River, presumably carrying Linda Cortile with it, which suggested to me that for the craft, or whatever it was, the East River doesn't exist in whatever dimension it's traveling in. Because I can't imagine, you know, I don't know how much you know about the East River, but nobody dives in there if they can help.
Bad news if they do, right?
That's right.
They'd rather be abducted.
So, you know, whatever was going on seemed to me to be an authentic mystery. And it deserved the kind of attention that it is not getting from the scientific community that seems very resistant to any reality that they can't measure. And of course, the odd thing about this phenomenon is that you can't measure it. There doesn't seem to be the hard evidence that everybody's looking for. There are, God knows, photographs, but they can be faked.
You mentioned that the conference kind of got new agey toward the end. A lot of times that term new age kind of gives the UFO research a negative connotation. Did you see that in a positive way or in a negative way?
Oh, I thought it was very positive. In that the straight extraterrestrial UFO agenda seemed very limited. And I think people objected to it being put in that kind of box. Particularly John Mack, for example, kept saying that he wanted to open the boxes, you know, to open the alternatives, not to limit it to what people were coming out saying, that UFOs were metallic objects from other planets, this kind of stuff. Not that I think a lot of people felt that in the beginning of the conference, but that was sort of what the agenda was. It opened with us having to read Dave Jacobs' book, I think it was Secret Life.
Secret Life, right.
And then Eddie Bullard's sort of compilation of the abduction phenomenon. So the setup in the beginning was, I think, very hard-edged, that kind of vision of it.
Okay.
But then John Mack, of course, and a great many of the others, and I say New Edge almost geographical, too, because I think the farther west people had come from the conference in order to get there, the more they were willing to accept other realities, other dimensions, the holographic universes, this sort of idea, the kind of stuff that Jacques Vallée is talking about, and Keith Thompson, and mm-hmm. some of the others.
No, I think pretty much everybody's aware that John Mack is catching a lot of flack professionally for his position, basically, on the whole, you know, the whole subject. But what's your take on John? You find him to be a pretty well-balanced individual and very credible. But, what's your take on his involvement in this phenomena?
I think anybody who gets immersed in it to the depth that John Mack has a tendency to pick up some of the agendas that come with the territory. I think it's unfortunate that Harvard's response to John Mack has been what it is, because I think Harvard can afford to have John Mack follow whatever field of research he wants to follow, and they should encourage him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The medical committee at Harvard that is investigating John Mack is doing so, I think, primarily based on their questioning his methodology, that they want him to come up with control groups and this kind of stuff, but it's very hard to figure out what an appropriate control group would be for people who believe they've been abducted. Is John Mack encouraging them in their delusions? Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think he's trying to hear them out and to take them seriously, which is, I would think, one of the major benefits of talking to John Mack.
Of course, I think also, too, I have to question Harvard's motives, because actually it should not be up to them to decide whether or not he was unethical. That would be, I would think, a matter best left for, say, the Medical Review Board rather than the Harvard University.
Well, it is the Harvard Medical School's review board that is questioning this.
Okay.
And I think Harvard is frankly, they're embarrassed by Dr. Mack. And I think they're, the shadow of Timothy Leary is still very long over Cambridge, so that they're worried that they've got another case on their hands of somebody who has gone overboard. Now, it's hard not to go overboard if you say that you think something is seriously going on and that these people may have been abducted. I think John Mack's strength has been in his coming up with the five basic dimensions of the abduction phenomenon, which are, the ones that I'm sure you're familiar with. I'll go through them quickly, because anybody who's trying to question what Mack is doing and can come up with an alternative, their alternative has to fit these five basic dimensions. The first one being the high degree of consistency of detailed abduction accounts, reported with emotion appropriate to actual experiences told by apparently reliable observers. Now, that sounds a little more gobbledygookish than I meant, but simply that these people are authentic, they're believable, that the very nature in which they present their stories indicates to me that they believe they are telling the truth. There's nothing in it for them to come forward and say, I've been abducted by aliens and the UFOs, except ridicule.
Right.
So the narrative consistency of their stories, recalled with an emotional intensity indicative of trauma, is something that you've got to accept, that there has been a trauma. Now, I think conservatively, a couple of hundred, and maybe as many as a couple of thousands of abductees have been given very detailed psychiatric tests by this time. And they fall into two clusters. The cluster one group tend to be a little more suggestive prone, fantasy prone than the national average, but by no means off the scale. Cluster twos are, and when they were talking about cluster twos at the conference, I leaned across to one of the psychiatrists and I said, who are the cluster twos? And he said, the crazies. Well, there are the crazies.
That's some of our conversation with journalist C.D.B. Bryan about the 1992 MIT conference on alien abductions. Now, coming up next, I have for you one of my favorite bits of UFO history, the actual 1947 news reports of a crash near Roswell, New Mexico. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the best of Paranet.
pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These are free, pocket-sized guides giving you information about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio frequencies, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, and local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours, free. Ask the fixed base operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call area 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at area 303-669-1800.
You think of them as over the hill, cranky. They've seen better days. They're not worth saving. But your old computers have the power to give new life. The computers you've written off as useless can prevent millions of people with disabilities from being written off. Every day, computers like yours are being used to train people with differing abilities. And, after a while, they can hum with skills society needs. Your old computers can help us develop this precious human resource. In the process, we might just discover another Beethoven, Albert Einstein, Franklin Roosevelt, or Helen Keller. Donate your old computers to the National Christina Foundation, a not-for-profit foundation. Call 1-800-CHRISTINA, 1-800-CRISTINA. Machines you can write off, people you can't. Donated computers and office equipment are tax-deductible.
Stay in touch with the latest news on the paranormal and the growing UFO phenomena by fax, computer network, and this program, the Paranet Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
As we conclude tonight's Best of Paranet, let's go back in time now to July 1947, when reports first surfaced about the crash of a so-called flying saucer near Roswell, New Mexico. Now, this is an actual recording of the ABC radio network with some of the first reports on the incident when the military was officially acknowledging that an alien vessel crashed.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection. Russia has demanded UN action to get all foreign military personnel out of Greece. Late this afternoon, a bulletin from New Mexico suggested that the widely publicized mystery of the flying saucers may soon be solved. Army Air Force officers reported that one of the strange disks had been found and inspected sometime last week. Our correspondents in Los Angeles and Chicago have been in contact with Army officials endeavoring to obtain all possible late information. Joe Wilson reports to us now from Chicago.
The Army may be getting to the bottom of all this talk about the so-called flying saucer. As a matter of fact, the 509th Atomic Bomb Group headquarters at Roswell, New Mexico, reports that it has received one of the disks which landed on a ranch outside Roswell. The disk landed at a ranch at Corona, New Mexico, and the rancher turned it over to the Air Force. Rancher W.W. Brazell was the man who discovered the saucer. Colonel William Blanchard of the Roswell Air Base refuses to give details of what the flying disk looks like. In Fort Worth, Texas, where the object was first sent, Brigadier General Roger Ramey says that it is being shipped by air to the AAF Research Center at Wright Field, Ohio. A few moments ago, I talked to officials at Wright Field, and they declared that they expect the so-called flying saucer to be delivered there, but that it hasn't arrived as yet. In the meantime, General Ramey describes the object as being of flimsy construction, almost like a box kite. He says that it was so battered that he was unable to determine whether it had a disc form, and he does not indicate its size. Ramey says that so far as can be determined, no one saw the object in the air, and he describes it as being made of some sort of tinfoil. Other Army officials say that further information indicates that the object had a diameter of about 20 to 25 feet, and that nothing in the apparent construction indicated any capacity for speed, and that there was no evidence of a power plant. The disc also appeared too flimsy to carry a man. Now, back to Taylor Grant in New York.
As we move closer to August 28th, when Fox airs their so-called alien body film, remember, if it's too good to be true, it's probably not. That's it. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week for another edition of the Paranet Continuum. Until then, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.